Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Professor Catriona O'Sullivan from the Department of Psychology in Maynooth University, good afternoon.
Hi.
Isn't it hard to believe that it's 2 years since you first sat there? I think it was your first media interview. You'd written this little book, Poor, a memoir about growing up in neglect and poverty. Parents who were addicts, I think what it did was it gave tremendous insight into how being poor affects every aspect of a child's life. So still in the bestsellers list, yeah. 2 years on. For anyone who hasn't read it, maybe first, I want to reflect on the impact of the book in general and on your life. But the gist of the story for people who haven't read it.
So I will start at the end. So yeah. I'm a professor of psychology, graduated with a PhD from Trinity, got a first class honours degree. If the listeners don't know, that means I'm deadly.
Yeah.
but I, 30 years ago, I lived in Dublin One in a one room bedsit with my 7-year-old son, completely dependent on welfare. 35 years ago, I was in a homeless hostel. 40 years ago, yeah, 35 years ago in a homeless hostel with my... I was 15, had a baby, no qualifications. 40 years ago, I was the daughter, 8-year-old daughter of two intravenous heroin addicts. I woke up every single day hungry for food, for a hug, for someone to teach me how to regulate myself. And I suppose my story is about the people and the policies and the practices that actually saved me, Brendan, that allowed me to demonstrate my excellence to the world. But it's also a reflection on what we can do to help people, but also how the trauma that goes with poverty stays attached to you. You know, there's a line in my book where I say it's like a wet blanket, and sometimes it's really heavy and it's still really heavy. And I wanted to write about that so people understand the consequence of leaving people live in poverty.
And the book became a phenomenon.
Yeah.
There's a stage play coming now. You've been invited to speak all over the world. So it all started, I think, with an article you wrote in a book called Trinity Tales. Is
yeah.
that right?
Yeah. So Trinity produced a book. I was actually interviewed by somebody for an article on mothers, on young mothers. And I just briefly said, oh, my parents were heroin addicts and I left school at 15. And it ended up being like front page news in The Independent. And I was trying to hide it at that time. I didn't tell anyone in Trinity particularly because I was lecturing and I was kind of outed by this article.
Were you ashamed of it?
I was really ashamed. Yeah, I was ashamed because I felt like I was trying to we call it code shift. I was trying to be different. I was wearing like clothes like them and trying not to swear the way I do. I was trying to fit and yeah. I never really did fit, but it's not something you want to announce, you know, because there's judgment and I would have heard the judgment. So I was but then I was just outed. But it was really, you know, successful article. And then Trinity asked me to write a chapter for their 25-year book, which is called Trinity Tales. And the Times featured it and that went viral. And then on the back of that, Penguin asked me, would I consider telling my story? So that's how kind of it started.
Okay.
And it was amazing. But also that first article really made me feel really vulnerable and embarrassed, a little bit embarrassed. And I remember going into Trinity and like it was like front page news and there was a picture of me in Trinity and just feeling like, oh my God, everybody knows now that I'm this bad person or this bad kid or something, because I had this sense that I was, I don't know, I still walk around sometimes with this sense that I'm still like a smelly kid or something. And that's how I felt when I was outed by the article.
So then back to here 2 years ago, the book had just come out. You were starting a book tour. How were you feeling at that stage about it?
I was so scared. Honestly, my husband, the night of the launch, he's, you know, we've been together. Me and Dave have a great marriage, been together 20 years. But he said, I've never seen you sweat and be so nervous. I think I've done a lot of therapy and I'm okay with my story. And I also believe that, Brendan, if you meet me and you know me for half an hour, you just know that I have stuff, you know, and good stuff, but I've had a history. So I don't think it's something that we hide from people, but like actually saying publicly, I robbed, I lied, I got pregnant as a kid, my parents were this, there's a whole different level.
What's the fear?
I think I feared most, I feared most my colleagues, the people in privileged positions. I feared the lack of understanding. I feared that they'd look at me differently, that they wouldn't see me as being just the successful, outgoing academic that I am or whatever. I had this sense that, and I was afraid that people would feel sorry for me, you know, that they'd see me as a victim.
Yeah.
And all that kind of, and I am a victim, but I also feel like there's sometimes a connotation that goes along with that. I remember when we were discussing what media I do, and I really didn't want to go on the Late Late. Because I always had this sense that I wanted to come on your show, because I had the sense that sometimes the last person on the Late Late, sometimes they're like the person that they're like the sorry story. And I am a sorry story, but I'm also a story of triumph, and I'm also a story of excellence. And so it was really confusing. I remember driving into work after the article was out in The Guardian, because it was really descriptive, and thinking, oh my God, are they going to treat me differently? So it was really nerve-wracking. But also exhilarating as well. Like there's also something, I want to swear, but there's something amazing about just going, oh, feck it, you know, all of me. Yeah. This is all the men I was with. This is all the things I ever did. There's something real exhilarating about just owning yourself.
Totally, that's the antidote to shame, isn't it? Like, put it all out there.
So it's a mixture, you know,
I feel. Except, like, you know, they say, like, you know, tell someone you can trust and get it out of your body.
But I was telling everybody.
You're telling the whole country. So then, right, and you say the article went viral, but I think the book kind of was like a virus as well.
Yes.
Like, so, tell me a bit about the feedback you started getting from people. So first, I guess there are people who are survivors like yourself identified with it.
Yeah, so even I was talking about work, Brendan, like that first day that I pulled into my job, one of my colleagues who I know, don't really know, she knocked on the window of the car, rolled down, and she said, I just want to tell you that this is what I went through as a child. And I just was like, oh. You know, like 1 in 4, I talk about sexual abuse in the book. You know, 1 in 4 adults in Ireland have experienced that. Like, and children who grow up poor are 10 times more likely to experience. So it's not unusual. And so the most amazing response is when people send me messages, and I still get at least 5 a day now, saying, you've allowed me feel less alone. You have allowed me experience a feeling that I couldn't allow myself to feel. So many men and women have messaged me to just tell me that they feel seen and they feel heard. And that's gorgeous, you know, and I read all the messages and I reply to all the messages, because I feel like it's really important that, like, this is not me trying to, like, this is, the personal connection is so important. When someone is brave enough to say to me, I've never said this to anybody, I always say, thank you so much, or recommend a therapist to them, or recommend a reading or a book to them, because it's wonderful. And I've had...
It's a lot to carry too, yeah.
It is. Sometimes it is, because sometimes people have never had a chance to heal, and you can feel that in conversations that they send you. But I do think, like, you know, it's all about how you meet people on an individual level, realistically, in life, and whether you leave them feeling good or feeling... or feeling like you didn't hear them or see them.
Okay.
And so the ones that like that, that can be quite tough. But I always respond and try my best to be as helpful as I can, or just say thank you for being brave enough.
I think a lot of teachers as well have gone on to you, yeah?
Oh, God, yeah. Like, I love the teachers. You know, my story, you know, my first, I was saved by a lot of people. So teachers, youth workers, lecturers, people in policy. But my experience with two particular teachers, Miss Arkinson and Mr. Pickering. Miss Arkinson, you know, she placed a light in me, Brendan. I was completely dark when I arrived in her class. I had met an adult capable of lighting me up. And a year with her had this little flame in me that has lit me for my whole life.
Ah, stop.
And she believed in me, though, Brendan. And it wasn't dependent on how I behaved, because I was a naughty girl. Actually, a teacher sent me a message the other day. She described me perfectly. She said, I taught you when you were 7. She said, you were scrappy. Sparky, clever and cross. And Miss Arkinson saw that I was cross, but she just loved me, irrespective of how I acted. And when someone loves you, in your life, it goes into you and stays with you. And so I know so many teachers try to be that, and sometimes they can't be that because of the pressures of the system. But I have had thousands of teachers, and also teachers fight with each other. It's actually great on my social media to see them, because I post a story about like getting fresh pants every day. I got washed in school and had fresh pants.
Yeah.
And teachers would say, we can't do that today. And then another teacher would say, I'm doing that now. Or I'd get teachers messaging me, go, I've set up a sanitary station in my classroom. I never even thought about fresh clothes or fresh underwear. It's been amazing, that side of it, and just to be able to have the conversations and influence policy a little bit has been wonderful.
And tell me then about rich, privileged people who have responded to you.
Well, all of the responses, I've had about five, I'd say, what I've seen, negative response, or people say, you know, I did have a situation where somebody said, your book should have been called Poor Choices, not Poor. And that was really hard. It wasn't the person saying it to me. She'd heard it from somebody else. And that really hurt me, Brendan, because I really believe, like, I didn't have a choice at the end of the day. My life was set. Most people's lives are set by the poverty. And it's very hard to escape. That's why my book's so successful, because I'm so rare what I've done. And so that was hard. But most people, like, I get a load of messages from people in privileged positions saying to me, what can I do? Like, what can I do? Okay. And I always answer them. I say, well, on an individual level, you could go to a local school, you could become a mentor, you could donate to somebody. At a systems level, you can advocate in policy, you could vote differently or vote better. So I kind of answer them people. So it's been a mixed bag,
yeah.
But a lot of privileged people. And I would have had I wrote about this recently, like a chip on my shoulder myself, around privilege, and I still do. And I say that chip is there because I've been stood on for so long. But one of the wonderful things has been learning that actually people with privilege also have difficulties and have had hard times. And there's a different level of challenge that comes maybe for people who've had more or had money, but they still have experienced difficulties. So it's been a lot of learning for me as well, and a lot of acceptance and realization. You know, I'm not the only person who's had a hard time. Mm. People have different differences, okay, yeah, and difficulties.
So the texts are flying in already. And there will inevitably be people saying, no, you should run for the presidency. That's the way it rolls.
A conversation that I've had, actually.
Yeah, with who?
With a few political parties.
I go on.
No, because, yeah,
which
so
ones?
Some of the left ones. I had a conversation where there was a conversation happening around maybe a joint candidate, and would I consider that? And I honestly really did consider it. And the reason why is, wouldn't it be amazing for Ireland to just have someone who came from absolutely nothing, whose life was just going nowhere, who was homeless, to be like the president of Ireland? The reason that I have said I wouldn't run, I'm not 100%, but I wouldn't run, is because I just don't think I could take the hurt that goes with the criticism that goes for women who run for politics, Brendan. Like, my story is one of like triumph and healing, but like I have fractures from my history. Like, I'm still really sensitive, and the stress of that, I don't think I could take emotionally.
A presidential election too, like when it's kind of like in academia, the stakes are so low that it's uniquely vicious.
Yeah, it's so vicious, but it's not vicious in academia at all. But there's something about political life and putting yourself forward for something amazing like that, where you're open to being criticised. And I just don't think I could take the level of criticism. I could take scrutiny, but I just don't think I could take the level of personal criticism that goes with that. I still have a hurt heart at times, and that might affect me too much.
Yeah, fair enough. You do talk to politicians. You were in Westminster last week addressing a committee on education. I think you've spoken at the UN as well. What do you tell them? What are your key points to them?
I tell them about the people and the policies and the practices that were available in Ireland in the late 90s that saved me. And I advocate for us to reinstate funding and support for programmes and practices that are no longer in place. So I talk about the fact that, you know, teachers were allowed to provide care in ways when I was younger that they're not able to do anymore, that we're not funding education in the same way, that community support and childcare and free education, all of these things have been stretched so far that a girl like me who has all this potential could never make it today. So I talk about, you know, how I got here, Brendan, and what worked in policy and what no longer works in policy.
Do they hear you? Do are they doing anything?
Yeah, so like, I mean, they definitely hear us. So like, I've spoke to you before about my the programme that I run, the STEM Passport for Inclusion. Like, that's funded now by the Department of Education. It's nationally run. They do hear. And I've seen like things that I've said being included in policy, in documents. So I think they hear it. I genuinely think there are a lot of people in positions of power who want to change things. When I went to Westminster, like they have a Labour government now. Labour in the UK did lots of great work in the 90s. And then when the Conservatives came in, that went, that actual policy and poverty reduction went down. And so I think there is a definite chance over there for it happening. I think in Ireland currently, we still lack the vision in terms of investing in youth work, in community work, in community creshes, and in that linked up space in education where we allow a person to find the route through to education. Okay. You lose one thing when you gain another thing in the system right now. So it's very problematic. But I, you know, I spoke at the Social Inclusion Forum recently. I am talking to policymakers.
So taking it away from specifics and taking it away from our politicians, right? When you meet powerful people, wealthy people, privileged people, are they all highly motivated to fix poverty?
No, not all of them. No. And when that happens, I'm really challenging. So what I, because I do get messages, and I've got messages from very privileged people. For example, I had a billionaire message me. He read my book and he said, it was one of the best books I've ever read. But I do have a query about what you're talking about at the end, because I kind of challenged the philanthropic approach to the charitable notion around education and empowerment. And he said to me, I wouldn't see you as being a charity case. I see you as someone who's being excellent. And I wrote back to him and I said, meet me for a coffee and I'll explain to you why what you're doing is wrong and how you can do better in terms of funding. Because they fund a lot of Trinity. They fund Trinity.
Okay, let's
but not Trinity. No. Yeah. And but like, there's no problem with that. But I was like, meet me. So when I meet someone who's privileged, Brendan, who doesn't have the attitude that I think you should have, I challenge them. And I also, this is what I always do. When I get a message from someone in a privileged position who says, I read your book and I loved it. Thank you for telling it. I write back and I say, don't just tell me that. What are you going to do? Mm. What are you going to do with that information? And it kind of shocks people a little bit. But I'm like, what, you know, don't just feel good from my story. Like, my story is a call to action at the end of the day. Yeah. What are you going to do now with the information that you have?
Yeah, okay. It's not just to make people feel virtuous for caring.
No.
I get this book. I understand. Yeah. That's a terribly
so
sad
I'd
story.
I'd be quite challenging around that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I bet you are.
Yeah.
you mentioned the teachers who made a difference in your life there earlier. Did you meet one of those teachers after the book came out?
Yes. Yeah? So Miss Arkinson, she's living up in Tyrone, and I went up about 8 months ago. So we've been chatting on text, but I was really scared to meet her, Brendan. You know, like when you're a kid, like you have this idea of a teacher. I was like, maybe I was wrong. Like, maybe she wasn't as nice. Maybe she's going to turn out to be an old bag and it'll be ruined, the whole idea. So I was kind of nervous about meeting her. But we arranged and I drove up and she made me a lovely Irish salad. And when I knocked the door, she says, at 12 o'clock, all right, she says, I've been up since 6 o'clock because someone so important has come in. And we sat down and she said to me, I have a bone to pick with you halfway through. And I was like, oh no, did I say something wrong? She said, I don't remember being that nice. And I said, I never said you were nice.
Yeah.
I said you were consistent and you always believed in me, irrespective of how I behaved. And you fed me and you hugged me. And she went, but sure, wasn't that my job? Wasn't that my job? Like, I just did my job. And I think that was a real example of the woman and the person that she was. She didn't see, she saw teaching as being about care. and consistency and making sure everyone could participate. And when I left, I said to her, did you ever move out of junior infants or a senior infants? And she said, oh, no, absolutely not. I could always pop the little ones on my knee to give them a hug at that age. And I just thought that was an example. I texted her yesterday, actually, because the play is coming out. You know, we're staging Poor in the Gate. And yeah. I wanted to come to the opening night. And she said, I'm really old now. I'll have to see if I make it that far. But if I do, I'll be there. So, yeah, that was lovely.
So the play Opening in the Gate, I think, at the Dublin Theatre Festival in October. I would have thought there was a film in it.
I've been asked to do film, Brendan, a good few times, and nearly signed a deal. Barry Keoghan wanted to play Dave, which Dave was delighted about.
Dave, the heroic husband.
Especially after he saw, what was that film where he was running around with no clothes on? He was absolutely delighted,
Saltburn.
But the thing about film is you really have no say. And I think my story, it could turn into a Shameless type film at the drop of a hat. Like you could, you know, you could vilify my mom, you could vilify my dad really easily. The thing with The Gate is I'm involved from the very get-go, every single part, casting, scripts, the whole lot. And they get it, Brendan. They get the story. Like I didn't just tell my story. Like I'm actually... It's a social document. Like I'm actually calling on you to think about how addiction comes about, like how my mum wasn't to blame, how I wasn't to blame, and how much more we can do. And a film, sometimes you just lose the control of that. And I don't need to do a film, Brendan. Like I'm not in this for money. I'm not in this for fame. I want to change the world. Like I want it to be a bit fairer. And the other thing about doing it in The Gate is like I just want hundreds of kids like me to go to the theatre. Imagine the whole theatre full of kids from Summerhill. All of them watching my story, all of them feeling seen, the cast being from working class backgrounds. Wow. Imagine that.
Yeah. Amazing. Come here. So people who read Poor, they will have read in it that your father told you he was from Goldenbridge as a young child. You said in the book you were at the start of a DNA journey because it's not unfair to say your father was prone to telling
lies. My dad
lies.
Was a liar. He was a full-blown liar, Brendan.
And you thought that might have been a lie as well. So did you get an outcome?
It was because of this show, by the way, that I got an outcome. So one of your researchers said you should take your DNA down and put it somewhere else.
Katrina, kind of an expert.
Expert, and her name is spelled the perfect way as well, exactly the same as mine. So I took it down. Long story short, my dad completely lied. He was never in Goldenbridge. There was never his auntie with his mother. It was all a lie, Brendan. I got his records. So I have to give kudos to the government and for what they've done in releasing the records to adoptee families. My dad literally was in five different... Back in the 50s, there were women who actually made money from fostering kids in Ireland who were in care. And my dad was in five of them homes before he was the age of five. And he was fostered. He was fostered in one family for 10 months up until he was about 11 months. And he was going to be adopted by the family. And on the Friday, they sent a message saying, we don't want him anymore. Pick him up on Monday. So my dad had a lot of trauma as a small child. So I do still feel the sadness for him.
Yeah.
But the whole story about Goldenbridge was a lie. But what's been amazing is, like, because of the DNA, I found my family. We're all from Cork. Every single one, all of my biology is full Cork. So when I went down to UCC to do a talk, I actually met my first biological family from my dad's side. Never met anybody that he was. So both sides, the father and the mother, they all came to the event. So I met five of our cousins, and I've kept in touch with them, and it's been a really amazing experience to connect with people who are my biology.
So that was
really nice to learn about his history, but also there was a lot of anger, Brendan. You know, my dad told such a lie. This story was so big in all of our lives about the nun who was supposedly his mother, but she wasn't. And so I've had to kind of process that over the last 2 years and forgive him again and again and again. As I said before, forgiveness isn't a destination. It's a choice we have to keep making, and I regularly have to make that choice.
Okay. Listen, you've won loads of awards as well. what were the ones that mattered to you? What were the ones that stood out?
I'm not a famous person, okay? So I'm not in this world. So it was really funny. I won a Tatler Award, you know. So you get shortlisted for all these awards when your story goes viral. So you probably know this. You probably won loads of awards, Brendan. No. But like I never, like I'd be like, oh my God, award, award, award. And I was lucky because I know Sonia Lennon a little bit. So I text Sonia a few times and was like, Sonia, is this a real award? She's like, don't go to that. Don't go to that. They're okay. All about
yeah,
the
we're
media.
Not saying the Tatler one.
No, Tatler was amazing. Yeah, yeah. So I went to I won the Tatler Award. That was really great, but really, it really upset me as well. I, you know, because when I was in the room, Brendan, I just felt like there's not a lot of, there's not a lot of women. I just felt like my mom would never be there. You know, when I did the speech, I was right at the end because I won the Special Recognition Award. And when I stood up, I said, you know, I wish my mom could be in the room. You know, women like my mom just die at the end of the day. So there's been like, I'm sorry, I'm getting emotional, but there's been like this kind of amazing feeling that I'm being celebrated. But also I'm really aware of all the women that are struggling and never get the chance to get awards or to stand up and be celebrated. So I was conscious of that at the Tatler Awards, really conscious. And I really said it in my speech. I said, look, you know, there's loads of women. We need to do more to make sure there's women like me here, to make sure that there's great women who come from all walks in the world who are getting awards. So that was emotional. But
yeah, you feel at home in those situations with the goon on.
I hate it, Brendan.
Like, up and all that.
No, like, I really don't like. Like, I really don't like it at all. I hate all the fake talk. Brendan, like you meet me, I'm like, so tell me about your history. What happened with your mom and dad? You know, like I'm like, let's go deep. And like, they're all like networking. Like I met a person from like a PR agency or whatever, and they were like, hi, what's your name? I said my name. She was like, okay, and she just moved on. And then Murrin O'Connor came and was like, Katrina O'Sullivan. And the next thing, this PR person came back, oh, you're somebody. Yeah. I like you now. So for me, it's just, don't get me wrong, what an honor to be awarded things and to be told that you're great and you're having an impact. But I much prefer the individual stuff. I much prefer like hearing about someone who's chose to go to college. I did win an award from the IACP. It's the Counselling and Psychotherapy Society of Ireland. That meant so much to me, Brendan, because you know this. I've spoke to you about this before. Like, I advocate for therapy. Like, therapy is what changed my life. People talk about Trinity or my job as if that was the solution, but it was the therapy that changed my life.
Yeah.
And so that
award, unfortunately, actually, a lot of kids like you know, from what I hear, it's straight to medication for every situation because basically the therapy isn't there for them.
Yeah, exactly. So that award meant a lot. And I went down, it was a tiny little hotel and it was real earthy. It was totally me. And the award just meant so much to me because it was like, I am advocating for therapy for people and it should be free and it should be available and there shouldn't be waiting lists for people. And I got that. That's what saved me, was the free, local and no waiting list therapy.
Come here, the junior and the leaving cert are starting on Wednesday. What advice would you give students?
I'd say to them, so write as much as you can, firstly, if you're listening. I'd say to them that, and this is what I say to my students, so they've just done their exams in university. I'm not measuring how nice they are or how kind they are as a person. The Leaving Cert is not in any way establishing what type of friend you are, what type of son you are, daughter you are. It is literally measuring like how good you are, this really arbitrary thing that is quite rigged, you know. So I would say to the kids, like, as long as you're a good person and you're trying your very best, that's what matters. That's easy for me to say. I'd probably say the parents are probably listening more than the kids because hopefully the kids are in the room studying. I'd say to the parents, like, you know, teach your kids about inequality and let the kids that are doing well and the other kids as well, educate them about the fact that the Leaving Cert actually measures so much more than what you know in your head. It measures what your school is like, how much education experience is in your family, how many grinds you've had. And also just like, best of luck. Write as much as you can. Like, we want you to do well.
Yeah. Good point. Just write anything you know.
Just
slap it down.
Anything.
Okay. Camira, any downsides to writing the book?
I suppose there are times where I feel really vulnerable. So I walk in a room and people know my business. I think the media bit was really hard, Brendan, like asking not to be ask things and then just getting asked them in a media situation, and you're feeling like that you can feel like doubly abused in a way, like you're just fodder for the media. And that can feel, you know, you can feel quite powerless about that. I think also, I suppose I've had a few negative responses and they can be hard. Like one article was quite hard on my dad. And so I have a list of people.
Yeah, I can see they're on
my resentment list. Yeah. But like in general, it's been, Brendan, I walk around with that seven-year-old girl. Like my book starts saying, this is for seven-year-old you. I've got you. That little girl is still in me. 2 years on, I've never felt so much love and care from strangers. It's actually taught me that the world is a nice place, that there's goodness out there. I didn't really think there was.
But they say that's the biggest decision we make in life, is the world a hostile place or is it a good place, and that'll be everything.
Yeah.
Well, listen, there's a lot of love and care coming in for you there. What an amazing woman, an inspiration. You're an inspiration. Really enjoyed reading the book, Poor, and it helped me in many ways. Oh. Enjoy listening to you being interviewed. That's Stephen in Galway. Katrina is such an inspiration. Like her, I eventually found my way in higher education through the kindness of others. Also from an underprivileged background, outed by a supervisor during the workshop. Though very uncomfortable, it literally changed how I view my own identity in the context of the workplace and the students I worked with. Brilliant. I realised that by not putting it all out there, I was complicit in what the research will call symbolic violence. Keep it up, Katrina. Oh. Force of Nature just booked tickets for her play in the Gay Theatre. And look, loads more warm. And someone there who keeps copies of it to give to people I meet who I think need it. A good teacher or adult in a child's life is invaluable. Professor Katrina O'Sullivan, as always, amazing. Thank you.
Thank you. Email brendan@rte.ie.